Hello.
This is the Phantom Electric Ghost Show, and we talk to artists from around the world. Today, we're going to be talking to artist Aaron Teal, who's going to make sure he's on the line, and then we're going to talk about his songs, Synthesis and Regeneration. So, let's give a hand to Aaron Teal. So, are you on the line?
I am. I can hear you.
Oh, great. Okay, so we're going to play your song, Synthesis, and then we're going to go into a discussion, and then we'll play your other song, Regeneration. So just hold on.
Sounds good.
So that was the song Synthesis by Aaron Teal. And so do we have you on the line again?
I'm still here.
Oh, great. So typically on this show, I like to talk to indie artists about their songcraft and kind of like their process and their inspiration for the type of music they create. So for this particular song, what was your inspiration? What was your process? Can you kind of give us a little discussion of that?
I guess to understand it would be my entire album is trying to tell a story. And this particular song was the transition between more chaos, which is what I would describe my first few tracks on the album, to something more ordered, something bigger.
So this album you created is somewhat of a concept album?
It's my vision of what an artificial intelligence would be from creation to destruction.
That's interesting. So, in terms of your process and putting this song together, can you tell us what type of gear you used, and maybe then we can talk about how you recorded it?
Right now, I'm working off of FL Studio. Pretty much using all the native instruments that are included. I'd love to say that I've got a plethora of analog equipment and physical equipment, but I don't. So a lot of it is pretty much just playing around in the different native instruments until I find something I like.
So are you using any kind of MIDI keyboards or controllers to actually record, or you're doing it all within?
I do it all within the workstation.
So I don't have any, you know, a lot of times if you've heard some of the discussions we've had with Rock Tunes, we tend to be talking about like outside of the box and like outside the DAW, but anybody who creates music that's, you know, doing something creative, we give props to everybody that does it, and how you do it is just like your process. So in terms of doing this this song, this whole inspiration to do this kind of concept album, did you have any particular artist that you were inspired by that led you to go in this direction?
There were a lot of artists that inspired me. I would say that the biggest inspirations were probably Scandroid. I'm sure everybody knows who he is. Facehugger was another big inspiration for me.
So how long have you been writing your own songs, and you know, what was the, like, the genesis of your decision to start writing music?
I actually started out in the late 90s, early 2000s as an electronic DJ here in San Francisco. I was a house and trance DJ. And I pretty much stuck within that genre for a long time, and it changed for me. I wanted to get out of it, so I kind of gave up music as a whole for a while, and then just got back into it about a year, maybe two years ago, when I discovered the actual synthwave experimental dark wave sound.
So that type of sound in that genre is like what really got you back into the game and decided that you actually wanted to be a content creator?
Absolutely. A lot of the synthwave artists and synthwave music that are out there, it's really inspiring to listen to how different they are and what inspires people to create them.
So have you taken this version, I mean, this type, this music you're creating, have you actually started to perform it anywhere, or like do it on the net or live stream it? Have you done that?
Mostly just promoted it on the net. It wasn't something that I had expected people to have a huge interest in. And I was really surprised when people actually did get somewhat of an interest, and I've gathered a bit of a following from it.
I think that's always interesting because, you know, this type of music is, you know, it's not mainstream. It's kind of like what college radio was in the 80s.
Exactly.
Because of the net, you know, you'd be out there. And And I find that, you know, you get, if you're on Bandcamp, you're on Bandcamp, I saw you. And
correct,
you just,
correct.
You get out there and you just get people from all over the world start following you. And I think that's really cool. And so one of the other things I wanted to ask in terms of, have you ever thought about collaborating, or have you collaborated with other artists within synthwave or electronic music? Have you thought about doing collaborations?
I've thought about it a couple times, and I've had a few offers from a couple of people, but I just, I don't think I'm ready. I'm not at that point yet, but it's something that I'm definitely interested in. And, you know, there are people that have helped me along the way that I would love to collaborate with, but I'm sure, you know, the feeling as a musician and as a content creator, you are your own worst critic.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's like the what stuff I do, I just have been doing it since I was a teenager, and it just lately I've just been getting more bold about it. But so the other question I had, so if you did start to bring this onto the road, have you thought about how you would actually do it in a club or in a festival? How would you actually take your material and actually do it on the road? Have you thought about what you would need to do?
It's honestly hasn't crossed my mind a whole lot, just because I'm just in the beginning stages of creating content myself.
So have you thought about maybe doing like live stream from your home studio as a, like an entry level way of like presenting it out there? Because I find when I was actually getting some feedback out there on the net from like Ava Live Radio and some other places, they indicated that, you know, the live streaming movement in YouTube and Periscope and Facebook Live, those are really good opportunities for indie artists. Have you thought about that?
I have. And I've watched a lot of people do the live stream and just watch their creative process. Watched what they're doing, and I've thought about it, and it the concept intrigues me. I just haven't gotten there yet.
So you're still in the building stages of your craft. You're trying to build your brand. You're trying to build your sound.
Basically, what I was known for years was strictly trance, was strictly psychedelic trance. And when I got out of that, I had to rebuild my name, because I was basically starting out brand new.
Have you thought of ways to like kind of cross-pollinate what you used to do with what you're doing now, with some of the capabilities of like the Pioneer DJ equipment and the Roland DJ 808? There's all kinds of things you could actually potentially do. Have you thought about that?
One of the things that I want to do after I'm finished with this album is I want to start to mesh some of the bass lines of psychedelic trance, because that's always using a large rolling bass line, hard, punchy, with some of the synthy sounds that you get from synthwave.
So in terms of like the tones that you use in the drum type of machines, so if I get into a conversation, I ask you, like, are you using like 808 or 909? Would you know what I'm talking about in terms of that, or are you?
Oh yeah,
So do you have any particular type of sounds if you were to describe like Moog bass or, you know, SH-101 bass? Or, do you have like? Can you kind of maybe detail what type of sounds or tones you like to use?
I prefer the Moog bass, honestly. It has more of the sound that I enjoy.
Kind of like that, the actual, like, I don't know, a lot of people say it has that authenticity, has the warmth, kind of fatness that you can't get from other machines. I've seen a lot of people talk about that.
It's got a depth that I don't think is matched personally. But I know a lot of people who would disagree with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are like real big on the SH-101 or the TBO, you know, the TB series systems. But I find, you know, I use a Mother 32 just to get that kind of modular
Moog sound and just oscillator. And you can fake the LFO to give you like a second oscillator. And using that Moog compared to using like a plug-in for an SH-101, it just, the Moog always, you know, when I played in New York City, people are just very impressed with that Moog sound. It just comes out of the, like if you go through a Marshall stack with that Moog bass, people are just like, wow.
even when I play around with equipment that I wish I owned, but I don't, like the Roland Jupiter 8 that I've played around with, that's another favorite of mine.
Yeah, the Jupiter, I think that's one of the best synths in the world. It's something that, you know, the System 8 has very much intrigued me, and I've talked about it with Rock Tunes previously. We talked about the System 8, you know, and the Jupiter 8. Like, but a real Jupiter 8, you really can't get away from it, because almost every single one of them was, like, different. Like your own little animal. If you find one, it doesn't sound like another one. Kind of like the way a mini mode. If you find an old mini mode from, like, 74, and you find one from 76, they don't sound the same.
No, not at all.
So you can use that, like the way a guitar player, like a Keith Richards, would go get, like, an Epiphone or get a certain Les Paul from a certain year because it has a tone. I find that the analog synths are the same way.
The same thing with the mini mode that just got re-released, what, two years ago?
Yeah.
It has similar sounds, but it's not the same as the original.
Yeah, I played like a 74, and then I actually went to a guitar center and I played that one. And it does, you know, it looks like it, and it kind of feels like it, but it's not it all the way.
No,
I mean, it's better than a lot of things out there, but yeah. I mean, I tend to go with a lot of like European modular gear nowadays. You know, there's a lot of really good stuff out there from little boutique companies, like Studio Electronics and Analog Studios. It's like there's a lot of cool, like you can get boutique synths that give you a very unique sound if you're trying to just get away from the typical sound. And I know
absolutely.
The plugin's not out there, you can do anything with the plugin. So I know people kind of, they're purists that argue like, I got to get the real analog modular Eurorack, or do I just get a plugin?
I think that's going to be a fight that's never ending. There's people who are 100% virtual and people who are 100% analog. And it's funny.
It's crazy that way. So I think I want to actually seg into your other song. So it's going to just give me a second to actually cue it up and then we're going to seg into that. Okay. So
sure.
Hold on. that was Regeneration by Orion Teal. And so they would go in more detail about maybe track by track your construction on this tone and this song.
I would say that this one's probably my favorite on the album.
For sure.
It let me kind of go deeper into the sound. And to start with, usually I start with creating a baseline first. Something that will give me a visual timing sequence. But in this case, I actually program the different synthesizer sounds first before I had anything else in mind.
So when you're talking about programming, did you actually create the tones from the workstation? Did you like manipulate the sound design, or did you use existing like pads and tones that you found?
I used mostly existing pads and tones that I found. There were some instances where I would change things, mostly in the filters that I used afterwards when I was trying to master it.
So you did it through like the equalization or the filtering or sound like effects?
Correct.
Digital delays and reverbs.
Exactly. Digital delays. I used the, a lot of, one of the things that I do like about FL Studio a lot is that you can go back in and put a bunch of different filters on it and compress the sound or amplify the sound or make a bass line a little bit punchier here and there. And that's pretty much mostly what I spent a lot of time doing that.
So do you use what kind of mastering tool do you use? Do you just use the program itself, or do you go and use
the program itself?
So do you bring it to a WAV file or MP3? What's your preference?
I prefer MP3s. They sound better on or can be played on pretty much any device.
Yeah. So in terms of your track by track, you say you start with the drum, right? Is that where you start, or you start somewhere else?
Typically, I start with the drum beat, just so I can have a time reference. If I'm going to be writing a synth sound in there, then I want it to sound right against the beat.
So, are you using any kind of tempo control when you do that, or you just use the drum machine or drum tracks it themselves once you got the timing, use that?
I pretty much just use the drum track by itself.
Then you build on top of that.
Exactly.
Would the bass come next, or you start doing pads on top of that and maybe put the bass in later?
The bass would come next for me typically because I like bass lines that don't change a whole lot during a track. I know some people say that's kind of taboo and they don't like doing that, but I think that stems from me being a DJ for so many years.
That makes sense given where you started. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people who do it completely differently. You know, they'll figure out a melody, figure out a lead, and then go from there. For me, it's just spending so many years as a DJ in San Francisco, I need to have that beat, that time. So
the terms of the pad references you used for this song, what were you going for, a particular kind of sound that you wanted in the choice of the pads you used, the synth pad?
Not specifically. I pretty much was just searching through Citrus and Harmer, which are, you know, obviously native plugins for FL Studio, and was just looking for something that I found that I liked. And then I played around. I had the melody kind of in my head that I wanted. I just had to spend a lot of time figuring out how to program it into the different plugins.
So that's interesting. In terms of your sound design, have you looked into like the virtual modular equipment that's out there, where people play with like virtual CV to generate all kinds of like synth weirdness in terms of like we were talking about the Moog, and I watched this documentary on like R.A. Moog. And when Moog first started, he had all these experimental musicians. It didn't even use keyboards. And I thought that was really interesting because that kind of segs into like bringing people in from the DJ, you know, world. The original Moogs that were built, like the 55s, Model 1s, 35s, they didn't even have keyboards. They were just manipulated by this thing called Complement B, which was a sequencer. It was like an early analog sequencer. So I was just wondering if you had thought about that type of sound design or manipulation.
It's something I've played around with in my head, but it's not something that I see as crucial to the music making process. I mean, it's completely fun and interesting to play around with. And I could probably spend hours upon hours in different studios just playing around, making different sounds. But it's not something that I see happening in the near future for me.
You're more comfortable in the using the like the digital audio workstation method and being
correct.
And kind of your fingertips, and I've had some people tell me that they kind of get lost in the DAW, that they feel there's too many choices. And they like going back kind of old school to like the hardware workflow. But if you're comfortable in the DAW, it kind of depends on where you came from. I'm a musician, a keyboardist, synthesis. So I tend to like the hardware. I've talked to people who are DJs and they're very comfortable in the DAW, and they're not so comfortable with like analog synths in themselves because they find them too complicated. But
It's an interesting paradox, actually, because coming from the DJ world, I can remember taking 50-pound crates of records with me everywhere. And slowly that started to evolve into people playing CDs, then MP3s, and now they take their laptop and use a pair of headphones and hook them up to a mixer, and magically you're a DJ.
Did you find when you're actually using the wax, the material you created is significantly different than what you do digitally?
I think so. It really depends. I mean, it was a different genre that I was in.
I guess as you started to progress to CDs and like the Pioneer type equipment, and then later people are able to take WAV files and go through, the different systems that DJs have. In terms of, you said you started with the wax, so was it a really big change in how you actually performed? Did it take anything away, or did you feel it added a lot to it?
I think it made it easier, personally. You know, you're going around with wax, and you're waiting for people to put out new tracks or whatnot for weeks or months at a time. Whereas when everything went digital for the DJ, at least, you had it right at your fingertips right there. You know, you wouldn't be carrying 30, 40, 50 records to an event. You could carry 5,000 songs on a hard drive.
So then it sounds like you would have more reference points, a bigger palette to play with.
Exactly.
And so that might open up things, because I hear people always saying, you know, they kind of are like reminisced for the old days, for the old school, and they always tend to say, oh, the analog, the wax, it sounds better, it's better. They tend to kind of be in that mode. You hear a lot of people doing that today. But you bring up the point that there's no way you could have 5,000. references or 10,000 or 20,000 reference points at your fingertips in that period.
No, absolutely not. The flip side of that is when you were carting around vinyl and you were playing vinyl for a crowd instead, it took a lot more skill. whereas you actually had to know how a record was built, where the phrases were, you had to know how to count beats, and now the machines do that all for you.
Oh, so do you think that in terms of creativity, even though you have more reference points, that you actually get your skills from doing it the old way more than when you, take care of, you know, they have this new capability that has all this auto correction, that maybe people should start off kind of like the old school way to kind of...
I think they would learn more doing it the old way versus just starting out in this wonderful digital world that we have.
Yeah, I think that's the same argument I hear with people who, you know, are like guitar players and bass players and keyboardists. When they look at guys, like, they do the whole record in Pro Tools versus doing like an old school, go to the studio and track every instrument. Bands, they're like indie bands, that it's like, I'd rather track every instrument in a studio or on a, you know, an actual digital audio recorder than to do it all in the DAW, because they feel they lose some of the authenticity that you would have got. If you think about back in the day, you get a band like a Fleetwood Mac or Tom Petty or somebody in a recording, the happy accidents that you get outside the DAW sometimes as a band, it seems to be something that people say that you lose some spontaneity when you do it.
I definitely agree. You know, unless it's the same thing with DJs, unless you're up there and you're trying to manually correct the timing when you're mixing two records together, you don't have an appreciation for the skill that it takes to do that.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. But I understand the world, you know, that we're going into, you get devices like, you know, Teenage Engineering's OPZ, which is, I've seen that thing, it will allow you to, like, write a whole album with this micro synthesizer, like, in your bed.
Wow.
It's like a little OP1, I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's a company called Teenage Engineering, make these little micro synths. They have a virtual 4-track recorder. Then it allows you to have all these plugins, but it has the sequencer built into the hardware. So it's a little hardware synth that allows you to sample, bring in your voice, multi-track, and then play with a sequencer that has, like, an unbelievable ability to, like, do sub-steps and sub-sequencing. And so that kind of mixes the world of the DAW, but gives you it in your fingertips so that you can actually have it, like, sitting with you on a plane or in a bus, and you could actually write material, like, on the road.
And I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that per se, but just like you had said, you know, when you're doing things physically, or, you know, you're playing around with an actual physical synthesizer, or even just playing in the DAW in different instruments and different plugins, a lot of the stuff that you make by accident, you can use later, or you find that it actually sounds better than you thought it did 5 days down the road.
Yeah, that kind of goes into, like, so if you've got an idea for a song, are you the kind of guy that's like, you planned it all ahead of time, or do you kind of let the DAW or the instruments you're using kind of guide you? You might have a general idea of what you want to do, but you let the drum beat kind of trigger which way you're going to go, you let the pad trigger which way you're going to go, or do you...
You know, it's... That's... It's an interesting question, because naturally I'm a very organized and very controlled person. And I was the same way when I used to DJ all the time. You know, I knew what time slot I would get booked for, and I knew what kind of music, and I knew what the flow of the crowd would be. So I knew how to build a set basically before I even got there. Now, doing this in doing work in the DAW and creating my own stuff, I find that inspiration comes, you know, from a lot of different areas. I could be watching a movie and hear a sound or two, And then the next thing you know, my girlfriend's yelling at me because I've been on my workstation for 4 hours trying to recreate it or do something different. So I would probably say abstract chaos.
Yeah. Well, I find that sometimes I'll have an idea where I'll track it. Like I have a Zoom R16 and I kind of old school track stuff. You know, track 1, 2, and I'll build it up to like maybe 16 tracks. But a lot of times, because I have this workflow, I can actually, you know, control things with this Roland MX performance mixer and have all the levels going into just 2 tracks. I can actually have like 10 instruments going into this 2 tracks and kind of play it all live. And sometimes that type of recording actually is more satisfying than the one that I actually tracked individually onto 16 tracks because it has more of a live feel. You kind of like go between like, okay, what's the correct way to do it? Oh yeah, you should track everything. But sometimes, you know, it's kind of what you would do in a live performance as a musician. You play that live, you don't have the opportunity to track it. And if you find if you record like you're doing something live, sometimes you get like an authenticity that you wouldn't get if you spent too much time tracking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
But if you actually, you know, so when you record, are you tracking everything, or sometimes you're having multiple tracks hit, like just two, like you're in the DAW, and then you have all these things coming into it on multiple channels, or you're actually tracking each instrument separately?
I started out, and I still do this now, I pretty much track everything separately. And I think that's more just for me because I like to have a visual representation of everything that goes into it instead of trying to combine it into 2, 3, 4 tracks only.
So that gives you an overall control to go back and like change things.
Exactly. It's part of that, you know, I want to have control over everything aspect of my personality.
Yeah, because I find that when I started collaborating, I actually started doing some collaborations with these guys in New York, this band called Lonnie Claire. And what was interesting, they would send me like a WAV file through the net of just like a guitar, bass, and drum. And then I would go and add like Moog and pads and then vocals on top of it within my Zoom and kind of EQ it there and then send it back to them. And we were going back and forth, and we ended up getting some recordings that were very unique in that we never played together. We just would share files and then combine them through our studios.
All the way from across the country. That's the wonders of the digital world.
Yeah, and then it was interesting that this record company in Australia said that they want to start doing that more because they had heard what I did. And they said they're planning on sending me some stuff in the future to do that because I guess that's like a new thing going on. That because of all this equipment now, you don't actually have to be in the studio with another artist. They could actually send you. And I've done it a couple of times. I actually did it with a rapper where he wanted like analog sounds and he didn't want to sample them. He wanted them like, you know, somebody to create new ones. And I did that for him and then he wrapped over it. So
wow.
There's a lot of ability to do that nowadays, and I see a lot of like online websites that actually have places to collaborate. There's one called like Music Gateway where you can go and find other artists and specifically say what you want, and then they'll send you the file and you can work on a project together.
Yeah, I think I've seen a couple of those places like Splice and Beats on the net where people upload tracks that they have in progress or tracks that they haven't finished yet and just put a description saying, you know, looking to collaborate, and it's all free to download and you can just add to it and re-upload it.
Yeah, I just think that's kind of cool. I think it would be really cool in the future if you could kind of do it real time on a web page that lets you like have a webcam so that they could see your studio, you could see their studio, and then you could actually replicate, you know, being in a studio together and actually record it, like, now, real time. I've actually kind of pitched that. I'm an IT guy, but I pitched that to a couple of places. Like, why not do that? Because then that actually gives you the best of all worlds. You could actually do something with somebody, and it doesn't have to be sequential. It could be real time. You know?
Absolutely. And that is actually a great idea. Because I think a lot of these sharing sites and even collaborating, just sending files to another artist or another musician, I kind of think you lose something in the transition. I mean, not completely, but everybody has an idea of what they want a track to sound like, you know, what their inspiration was, and then that might get muddled along the way.
Yeah, I think the whoever's like the A-level personality starts to change the track to what they want.
I would agree completely.
So the original intent of the track might have been one thing, and then once some other guy says, well, I'm going to be very assertive about what I want, and then see if the other guy accepts it.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the reason why I haven't really thought about collaborating with anybody at this time.
So I know that your tracks are on Bandcamp. That's where you sent them from. Are they anywhere else on the net that people would want to know about?
I've got my entire album up on Bandcamp, as well as SoundCloud and Dropbox.
So do you have others? I think you sent me your Facebook. And do you have other social media that you maybe could send me separately? Because I will post on my own social media, and you'll be able to get this link right off the Spearman app.
I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, and obviously, you know, I'm on Instagram. And I'll send you the Twitter, my Twitter link. But as far as social media, that's pretty much as far as I go.
That's fine. That's enough. Because we've been able to push these out on the replay. You know, we're getting over 1,000 hits on most of them. So that's been very helpful to some of the people I've talked to. They've appreciated it. And I just did this because I'm an indie guy. I've been playing since the 80s. And I found that there were people, you know, asking people to pay, you know, them to do this. And I'm like, why do you have to do that? Well, why doesn't somebody just do that? And I said, well, you know, I'll just do it.
Oh, and that's awesome that there are people like you who do this, because it's so hard, especially for people like me coming back into this game after spending time away from it and seeing how things have changed and not really knowing the avenues that I need to go to get my stuff out there. I mean, even just on Bandcamp, I was so surprised. I think I put my first track up on August 5th or 6th. And since then, I've added to that album. And just from Bandcamp and maybe a little bit of promotion on Facebook, I've gotten 600-700 views in that month.
Yeah, it's very surprising. I mean, I've been able to get a lot of views on other platforms. I'm on this other platform, maybe you haven't heard of, this one called Fanburst. Kind of like SoundCloud, and I got out there because they found me on SoundCloud, and their executive said, hey, why don't you put the material here, and I, like, beta tested it for them. I'm an IT guy on the side. And so what's cool about that platform, you want to check them out, is they allow album format, and they have very good high-quality audio output. They're not an app, so they're only, like, on the net. But they're free, and they're pretty good in terms of the quality of the audio they produce. And they let you actually format albums with lyrics and artwork, and it's pretty cool.
I'll have to check that out. I had not heard of Fanburst before.
Yeah, fanburst.com, you might want to check them out. You can set up an account free, and they let you actually link to your Bandcamp or link to anywhere else. They actually have a purchase button that lets you actually put your Bandcamp link or any other or like an Amazon link or an iTunes link, and you can actually put it in there. So that's very helpful.
Yeah, and that was a big surprise for me too. Along with all those hits and views that I've had, is there have been quite a few number of people who have paid for the album as well.
Yeah, which surprised, you know, how many people are out there buying indie music.
Oh, absolutely. And it's I started just with an idea and wanted to get the stuff out there and didn't really even think that, oh, hey, people would pay for this. And next thing you know, I'm waking up to emails saying, cha-ching, another X number of dollars from Bandcamp.
I think if people are hungering for, like I said before, like the college radio, the indie radio, and sometimes like the regular radio has kind of become very dull, in my opinion. And
I would agree with that 100%.
And where you see things going on, it's like SoundCloud, Bandcamp. You know, that's where the real music, you know, trend, the new trends where the artists are very significant to me. The new guys coming out, the new breed of people, they're all on these other platforms. They're all kind of outside the record labels. And eventually, when you get big enough, a record label pulls one of these guys, you know. But they seem to all start on these platforms between YouTube, Facebook, Bandcamp, SoundCloud. That's where everything's going on. And so that's why I tend to always look for other artists. I like to get a lot of reference points.
And there are so many good artists out there who are completely unknown and should be. I live in the Bay Area. You know, I'm out in San Francisco every weekend, and there's so many amazing artists, so many amazing musicians that I see on a weekly basis that I've never even heard of.
But if you ever see them and talk to them, kind of push them this way and tell them I'll give them free promo, because I'm all about doing that. Like every weekend, I've been scheduling things out, talking to a guy named Electro Cat from Israel next week. I got a couple other bands lined up. They're all indie. I talked to this punk band called The Muted in London a couple weeks ago. Talked to a guy in Japan for that. I tend to have a very wide berth. I want to see anybody, any genre. I'm not limited to just like electronic music. I talked to a punk band because I kind of have a punk aesthetic in the way I record anyway, even though I'm an electro guy.
Hey, you know, I love punk music personally. I still remember going to the Gilman out in Berkeley when Green Day was in its infancy.
Oh, so you remember Hoosh Gidoo?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Bob Mould, Grant Hart, they were my like heroes. I grew up listening to, you know, Landspeed Record, Andy Applegray, and all those great songs. I mean, that's a lot of what I try to do is try to bring a punk aesthetic to keyboards. You know, try to bring heavy distorted tones into a synthesizer, because that's kind of, you know, I grew up listening to Sex Pistols, The Clash, The Ramones, people like that. So
I bring that to it. I wish I knew how to play the guitar, because that was one thing I would love to do is record guitar song and then manipulate it within the DAW.
That's a cool idea. So I would say I've been able to use synthesizers to kind of replicate it. There's nothing like a real guitar, because I just can't play guitar. I'm a keyboard.
No, and I mean, it's the same thing with a virtual synthesizer versus an analog. The depth isn't there. You don't have the lead in on the guitar chords when your fingers are on the chords and you can hear it. So that's something that I would like to play around with soon, I hope.
It's always a goal. I'm planning on learning myself, but I can get the Moog to do a lot, so I take what I have. But yeah, this was great, and I will let you know. Well, the app will actually let you know when it's ready. The link is ready, but I'm gonna push it out everywhere I can on my own social media, and then you can take it where you want. And I'll take the logo you sent me and use that where I can.
Awesome! Thank you so much.
Yeah, and then what I like to do is say I like to check everybody out maybe 3-4 months down the line and see where you are. with what you're doing and see where you've progressed and what you're doing then. And so I tend to tell everybody I'm going to talk to you again within 3-4 months and we'll have another session.
I hope so. I could talk to you about, I could talk to you days about equipment.
cool. Yeah, we can get into that more. I'm really getting psyched about some of the new stuff coming out. But I'm coming from a synth perspective. I'm always looking for new gear to get new tones.
And the sad thing is having a love for synthesizers and equipment will quickly make you go broke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm dealing with what I have for now, and then my next little thing is thinking of getting a boutique. They just came out with a D5, which brings back this one of the this early Roland digital synth. It was like a Linear synthesis. It's kind of like their answer to a DX7, but it's capabilities that the DX7 didn't have. And if you hear it, it had the ability to do this. Kind of like it could actually sample synthesis and have all these different things going on in the envelope, like ahead of you actually. It was just a combination of a lot of different tones and frequencies happening. They made it a little bit different than a DX7. And they brought it back in a boutique module, which is kind of cool. I'm kind of getting Yeah, it's a cool machine. It will give you a sound in terms of a pad. That might be very useful when you're recording because it's fully polyphonic and it has a lot of every synth plugin they created for it back in the day is included, and there's a sequencer and it's just a little module. It's easy to carry around, and it gives I recommend to anybody that does this type of music looking at the little boutique modules from Korg and Roland. That they're building that gives you some capabilities from a hardware machine that you can't get in the DAW, and you might want to check them out. They're not that expensive. Now, I don't work for them, but there's stuff that you can do. I mean, I look at guys who are small companies from Europe. They make noise and stuff like that. I like a lot of the stuff coming from these little boutique companies as well.
Okay.
A lot of cool stuff coming out. Teen engineering, like I told you about. But yeah. Well, I'll check you later, and we'll push this out. And this crowd, I'm shooting for this one to hit over 2,000. I'm trying to push, yeah, but we're getting close on some of them.
That would be amazing. And thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good rest of the weekend, and keep on out there. Keep on pushing your music. Keep on doing it, because people want you. You'd be surprised how many people want to hear something new.
I'll do my best, and I'll hope to be talking to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, have a good one.
Hey, that was Arian Teal. Give him a hand, everybody. We'll talk to him on the backside. See you guys later.